Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the beginning of history here at Arrogant Student Nation. Evan Budrovich and Jacob Friedman in the house to give you some excellent insight on USC sports and the Pac-12 world and beyond. Jacob, give the viewers a little bit of information about what's going down.
What we're going to try to do with this podcast is sort of give you an idea on what's going on in sports beyond the gridiron here at USC. Our disappointing football season is thankfully over, but we have a lot of interesting sports that are fun to follow, especially basketball, one of the nation's second, maybe third most popular sport. And here at USC, it may not be the most successful of basketball seasons, but it sure is turning out to be an interesting one on both the men's and women's side.
Absolutely, Jacob. You talk about the men's basketball team right here. I'm Evan Budrovich talking at this moment. USC played two games this weekend, one against a highly ranked Oregon Ducks team, came up a little short there, and then against Oregon State, got the victory, you know, a little nail-biter down the stretch. But, Jacob, tell us how USC was able to pull out the victory against a scrappy Beavers team.
Well, it wasn't pretty, I must say that. The Trojans, despite what we've seen all season, came out with a lot of offensive fire early, especially in the second half. They built up a 15-point lead against the Beavers by doing what the Trojans did not really do under fired head coach O'Neal: move the ball. And so they built up that lead, but then Oregon State started to play a 1-3-1 zone on the Beaver or on the Duck.
Yeah, Jacob, before you get there, though, we need to talk about how USC was able to get up to this lead. You talked about moving the basketball and making shots. I think first and foremost, Byron Wesley needs to get a little bit of credit, because this is a guy who is an unassuming leader on this basketball team. Not necessarily assertive with the ball, but when he drives, especially with that left hand, he can finish strong off the glass. Is he going to be a guy we have to look for as the season progresses to score some points?
Oh, of course. Wesley was arguably the top recruit out of California in his recruiting class last year. He's currently a sophomore, and he's definitely shown a lot of progress in these past few games. He had a great opener against Coppin State, but after that he sort of tailed off and let the scoring brunt go to Eric Wise, a senior forward transfer out of UC Irvine. But lately, Wesley's seen a lot more time with the ball with the struggles of point guard Gio Fontan, and he's sort of taken advantage of that and sort of been able to develop his scoring repertoire. We're still looking for the jump shot from Byron, but it's definitely inspiring to see how hard he goes into the lane.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned a lot of transfers here, Jacob. I like to call this team the University of Spoiled Transfers. I know the reputation is usually spoiled children, but Eric Wise, Gio Fontan actually transferred here. Omar Arabi, got to forget Dwayne Dedmon was a transfer from a JC. The list goes on and on. Ronaldo Woolridge.
Yeah,
I'm
looking
Stewart.
At the box score from the last game. Only two players came straight out of high school to USC. Chaz Bryan, the freshman walk-on point guard, and Byron Wesley.
Yeah, Chaz Bryan's an interesting case as well. He's played in every game this season for head coach Bob Cantu. But he's a nice spark off the bench, and I think I'm projecting forward here. Gio Fontan is the senior of this team, and he'll be leaving at the end of this season. What kind of team do we have with Chaz? Because I believe we are going to have a fast-paced, high-intensity team, because Chaz gives you his full effort for however many minutes he's on the court.
I think it's definitely going to be an interesting take to see what happens next year, because we are losing a lot of players. We're losing Wise. We're losing Fontan. We could possibly lose Dedmon to an early entry to the NBA draft, but this USC team next year, they're going to be a little bit smaller than they are next year besides Dedmon and Arabi, but they're going to be a lot faster. So that's the main thing that we've seen from this coaching change as well. Kevin O'Neal, his role in the NBA as well as in college was a defensive coach, but now we're seeing a lot more ball movement, a lot more drives. We're even seeing a little bit of a fast break start to spurt. And Chaz Bryan, that's what he's done. He enjoys leading the fast break, and he enjoys driving in the lane. He's only 5'9", but Bryan is sort of going to represent sort of a new team that's going to focus a lot more on ball movement and a lot more on speed than from what we've seen from this, at times, plodding USC squad.
Yeah, this is a USC team that averaged under 60 points a game last season. But check this out, Jacob. This season, seven straight games of over 60 points for the Trojans. They've really come to play lately. Let's get into that Oregon matchup here a little bit. Number 21 ranked Oregon coming off a huge win over Arizona, very confident team. But USC made this game very difficult down the stretch. They fell behind by 10 with a couple minutes to play. But high intensity at the end of the game, I think really carried over into that Oregon State matchup. Do you agree?
Oh, definitely. The Trojans, they've been known to have a little bit of a slow start against Oregon State. They started out with an early 9-point lead just a couple minutes in and just kept moving it up. It was 9 points at halftime and 15 points early in the second half. But yes, honestly, I believe that the Trojans played better against Oregon than they did against Oregon State. The results might not have shown, thanks to a last-minute shot that did not quite go the Trojans' way, but losing by two to a team that had just knocked Arizona from the ranks of the unbeaten is nothing to frown at.
Yeah, and to score 74 points, and check this out, Jacob, Oregon's only averaging, before that game, 61 points per game against this season. So USC did an excellent job of scoring the basketball. JT Terrell really came out of his shell. It's been long documented, and we will let you know on this show, JT Terrell was in Kevin O'Neill's doghouse. There was no way to avoid that
conversation. Oh, you got a kitchen and a bathroom in there.
Yeah, you got the kitchen, the bathroom, the whole sink's coming at you. But first game without Kevin O'Neill, JT Terrell looks a lot more relaxed on the court. 22 points. How do you explain that kind of performance from this guy?
Well, the thing is that JT Terrell, he's the guy that's going to take the bad shots. He's going to take the shots that you just sort of want to look away and pray that it's over in a couple of seconds. But what happened in this game is he was not taking as many of those. And even more important, he was making those crazy shots that you don't want to see him take. So JT Terrell couldn't find a shot under Kevin O'Neill. But I saw Terrell took about 6 3-pointers out of his 9 that he attempted in the game that I sort of was not too happy about. But he made 3 of them. And when that happens, JT Terrell is a dynamic scorer, and you have to rely on him, and you have to just keep letting him take his shots because he's going to make a couple of that will just wow you.
Yeah, absolutely. JT Terrell, his season high before this game was 21 points against Marquette. On Thursday, he really came 22 points, and check this out, 50% shooting, which is always a key for Terrell because you know he's going to take a lot of shots. Meanwhile, Eric Wise, kind of the unassuming role on this team as well with Wesley, not a vocal leader, but does an excellent job at the 3 position. Remember, he got moved around a lot from the 4 and the 3. But against Oregon, he played the 4 position for USC. And I think he really relished that role. 17 big points and 6 rebounds for USC.
Well, I talked to Eric a little bit, and he said that he doesn't mind playing next to Denman and Robbie, but he seems like he'd be a lot more comfortable playing at the 4, because what he wants to do is he wants to take a little bit more of an offensive facilitator role. Like, under O'Neill, most of Wise's shots either came on sort of rebounds or came on passes from Gio Fontan, but Wise sort of wants to facilitate a little bit more, so what he wants to do is he wants to drive into the post and then kick it back out to one of the guards, and that opens up the floor a lot more for the Trojan offense instead of just having 4 guys standing on the perimeter with Arabi or Denman down low.
Yeah, you mentioned that because, check this out, in the game against Oregon State, Eric Wise was playing the 4 position, but he was playing more of a stretch 4 in Devin Collier, which put a lot more pressure on Wise, actually allowed him to play more of a perimeter role because of his 3-point shooting. 7 of 12 from the field for Wise, 18 points and 5 rebounds. So it looks like he's becoming a 15-plus scorer per game for USC, a team that now you can consistently say will put up 70 points a night.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing, because Wise, he was our only consistent player, but you mentioned JT Terrell and Byron Wesley. We're having players that can average and score 10 points each on a nightly basis. And Gio Fontan, he still really hasn't found his shooting touch, and he had an alarming 10 turnovers in the game against Oregon State.
We'll get to that in a few minutes. Don't you worry. We'll talk about Fontan's turnover rate. Let's go over some of those point per game averages because you've just mentioned them here. Eric Wise is the leading scorer on this team, putting up 12.5 per game, a little less than a baker's dozen, but we'll get there sooner rather than later.
He's putting up 15 points a game in conference play.
He is. He's really taking some clutch shots, good shooting percentage from the field. JT Terrell, the classic guy. You want him to shoot the basketball. You just hope it doesn't convert into turnovers and easy baskets for that team. 10 points per game for him. Byron Wesley, super sophomore, we mentioned him. Just a blip under 10 points, 9.8 per game. And then Mr. Point Guard, Mr. Captain, Mr. Senior, Gio Fontan, 8.4 points per game. What's been up with Gio's offensive game? Before the injury last season that took him out for most of that season, he was scoring on a nice tear for USC. Now very inconsistent in his offensive game this season.
Well, part of the issue has been, I think, the one loser of this whole Kevin O'Neill firing situation is Gio Fontan. He mentioned in the press conference the day of KO's firing that he called Kevin O'Neill immediately after the firing and sort of talked to him. Well, there's not confirmed, but a lot of players on the team were not exactly disappointed to see Kevin O'Neill be shown the door.
Oh, no. To further that point, I think guys like Ronaldo Woolridge, Ari Stewart, weren't necessarily liking their time in the rotation. And they felt like, even Terrell to an extent.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
I have a stat here. Terrell, in the 2 games under Bob Cantu, he's played 12 minutes more a game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that really comes down to whenever a coaching change happens, and I think we've seen it numerous times, either the team plays inspired basketball in a positive direction, or when a negative situation comes up and it becomes more of a distracting thing and the team regresses stupendously or at a higher rate. This USC team has responded. You look at the Oregon game where they blew an opportunity to tie the basketball game, a couple missed shots, maybe 2 3-foot shots. But as you mentioned, came out fast and early against Oregon State and had a 15-point lead in the second half. That's something you can definitely carry for into the Arizona games next week.
Yeah, definitely. And sort of looking forward to the Arizona games, Cantu also mentioned that he believes they can win one of two. He thinks that they're, and he's confident that they're going to beat Arizona State. And if you had told us 3 weeks ago that USC would be confident about beating a 14-4 team on the road, I would have told you to just get out.
Let's talk about Arizona State a little bit, because this is the team that is coming up on USC's schedule. Obviously, playing in Tempe is never easy. USC has statistically not done well on the road in general, but in Tempe, it's been almost like a living, let's call it going to hell, to quote-unquote the Sun Devils here. Jacob.
Sure, hot enough.
How can USC defeat Arizona State?
Well, just what they need to do is watch game tape of the Arizona State-Arizona game. Arizona State had Arizona come in, ranked team, but they're your rival, so you're obviously going to play fired up against your nationally ranked rival, and then Arizona just completely shut down the Sun Devils in the second half. They just ran away with it. It was a close game for most of the first half and the early second half, and ended up being a double-digit win by the Wildcats.
Yeah, Arizona won by 17 points. Mark Lyons really had a good game, and Nick Johnson. They're two guards. So here's the key with that. When you see guards putting up large amount of points, what does that tell you? One, perimeter defense, a little shaky. Right now, Arizona State's probably best defender. Well, you find me their best defender, and I'll give you $100. Their defense has been mediocre at best. Jahi Carson, probably their best point guard. A very inspirational story about him. But 22 points in the game. The key is going to be, can Fontan and Wesley create some penetration and kick down to the big guys, or find some open shooters in the corner like Terrell?
Yeah, definitely think taking advantage of Carson. Because Carson, on the defensive end, he's below average. He's averaging 16 points a game, 5 assists. He's second in the Pac-12 in assists. But on defensively, he's a liability. And so Fontan, who struggled offensively, but if Fontan can take advantage of Carson's sort of freshman inexperience and sort of difficulties playing defense on the perimeter, then definitely you want to move the ball on the perimeter as much as you can and just find the big men down low. But what I think is most interesting about Arizona State is that they are so reliant on Carson. Carson has come in and immediately become their leader on the floor, but when Carson is shut off, they're struggling. But what you really sort of wanted to do, what we saw against Oregon State, is Roberto Nelson went off. We let him score. I mean, we didn't want to let him score, but we focused in on Roberto Nelson and tried to make Oregon State's offensively average big men beat us, and that's what we should do against Arizona State. They have Jordan Bashinsky and Jonathan Gilling. They're solid players, but they feed off easy baskets and easy entry passes into the post from Jahi Carson. But if we can shut down those two and force Jahi Carson to beat us with his jump shot, then that is our key for victory.
Exactly, and this relates back to the Cal Berkeley game against Alan Krabby, an excellent player who can shoot the lights out with anyone in the Pac-12. USC contained him in the first half. In the second half, Cal coach Mike Montgomery said, we need to screw our traditional game plan of getting teams involved, and let's go right into feeding Krabby the ball. What did Krabby do? He started jacking up three-point shots, went right on Wesley and Terrell, and took them to town in that second half, putting up, I believe, was it 18 points in the second half? The point being, he went off on a tear and really made it difficult. Cal ended up winning that basketball game. And USC, that put him at 1-1 because they beat Stanford earlier in that game. But Jacob, you know what's going to be the biggest challenge of that weekend? Trying to beat a top 10 team in Arizona. This is a team that plays very well at home. They defeated Florida this year. They did not lose to Colorado. But in the same way that Seattle beat Green Bay, I think that can be applied to this Colorado-Arizona game. So Arizona is a team that's been impressive so far, but you do have to keep in mind, in Pac-12 play, they have not been as dominant as they were outside of the conference. Jacob, what gives?
Well, it just seems like they seem to be struggling with sort of the nightly in and out and sort of the grind against playing against teams that, while they may not be making shots, they have Pac-12 level talent. If you look at Arizona's out-of-conference schedule, there was two pretty hard games against San Diego State and Florida. But other than that, it's mostly teams that are going to be on the outside looking in on it in this postseason. But as we saw the first weekend against Colorado and Utah, they beat, I don't think they beat Colorado. They had a win over Colorado, mm-hmm. and then they beat a Utah team that USC went on the road and beat Utah by 17. This Arizona team at home beat Utah by 3. And so that shows that if Utah can – Utah is not a terrible team, but if they, Utah can hang with
Arizona. Just a quick note on Utah, though. Utah beat your boys from Washington. I know you're a big Northwest kind of guy in a sense. They went into Washington and got that victory. They also played Arizona State to overtime. UCLA, they only lost by 4. And against Arizona, they were down to the buzzer there as well. So this is a team that maybe USC overplayed to their potential against Utah, really dominating them from the tip. Meanwhile, this team has been very competitive in their other games in Pac-12 play. So just keep that in mind when you're thinking about Utah basketball. But back to Arizona and the big matchup over the weekend on Saturday. Arizona presents a lot of issues. One, Solomon Hill is a monster. Like Jordan Hill, very aggressive on the rebounds, can put up second-chance points, and will make life difficult for our big boys in Dwayne Dedmon and Omar Robbie. I would not be surprised, Jacob, now check this out, if Coach Cantu starts Fuller in that matchup, only because Fuller's a little more athletic, he can stretch the floor because Arizona's going to want to drive and dish and get Mark Lyons open. And we know, you actually wrote this in a piece, you can go ahead and plug this when I'm done with this little comment here, Robbie and Dedmon struggle in pick-and-roll basketball. Kind of explain what that means for the sense of the game.
Well, we saw this in Oregon, and we especially saw this in Oregon State, is that Dedmon, as we know his story. He's only played a couple years of organized basketball. And so while he's very athletic and he's very good blocking shots when being posted up by his man, he struggles to adjust defensively. And so this will be sort of the issue with Arizona, is that their guards are very aggressive and their guards are always moving the ball around the court. Arizona is a ball movement squad. They are not they have a solid half-court offense, but they beat you with your speed. And as we've seen with USC, we saw this against Oregon. USC, with Dedmon and Arabi in, they'll get beat down the floor. Or USC would make a crucial three-pointer against Oregon, and Oregon just raced back down the floor and get an easy layup.
Oregon had over 15 transition points against USC. And that's going to be the key. When you're on the road especially, you allow that zone of zoo, like they call the student section in Arizona, to get into a basketball game, it's going to be tough for USC. But here's where they have a shot, Jacob. If they can play strong defensively and force it to become a half-court game and take Arizona out of their speed like the way San Diego State did, they lost that game, the Aztecs did, by 1 point in a 60-point. Remember, 60 points is more USC style. You get into the 70s and the 80s, that's where Arizona wants to play. They average 75 points per game, this Wildcats team. That's where I think USC has the advantage, if they can slow down the pace of play.
What I think is sort of interesting for the Trojans is that you look at their schedule, they haven't really played a lot of games against teams that fill the crowd. And from what we've seen from this Trojan team is they've been a little bit listless. We saw a change in this in Oregon State where they were fired up. They're in a close game. They have a chance to win in front of their fans. You saw JT Terrell yelling at the crowd after making a corner three and getting fouled. It was a good thing to see. And so if you think they're going to go into Arizona, stay in Arizona, I want to see the big men get mad. Omar Arabi, part of the issue is from what I've seen, it's just general apathy. I want to see Omar Arabi maybe get back down, get an elbow in his face, and sort of get a lot more aggressive on the offensive end.
We see this from Dedmon at home a lot. When he picks up fouls and starts pumping his chest, like in the inspirational videos before the game, this guy, when he starts playing with a little bit of a mean streak, is really aggressive in the paint. I think Arabi is the same thing. He needs that mean streak, although more of a passive individual in general, not going to be confrontational on the court. When he's confrontational with the basketball, you know, him, ball, basket, basically caveman-style play, he really becomes a force that might be able to block some shots and disrupt other teams' offense.
Yeah, exactly. And what the issue is, or something we're going to see this weekend, is Arabi
meeting. What are we going to see this weekend, Jacob?
We are going to see two very big men in the post with the Arizona game. Arizona has also their sort of raw sort of center in Caleb Tarchewski, and he's sort of been disappointing as a freshman, but the issue is that he still is going to challenge Arabi with size.
Yeah,
of what we've seen in the Pac-12 play has been a lot of undersized power forwards that have to play center being passed up against Arabi, and he's actually sort of struggled because they have the speed. As you saw against Oregon State, their man-child, Joe Burton, is only 6'7", but he was getting some hook shots.
6'7", about 285, 290, depending on how much he ate before he was on that weight scale. Burton, you have actually a nice reference about Burton. He put up double-digit points in that game. Tell us about what you think Joe Burton's like on the basketball floor.
Well, Joe Burton, you just sort of see him and you're like, wait, this guy represents more of like a pickup truck than a basketball player. And then you see him plodding down the court, but then you see him sort of come alive in the paint. And he reminds me of that sort of the guy you see that's maybe let himself go in the rec league. He's 40, he played basketball in college, he's maybe up to 350 pounds.
Talks a lot of trash.
talks a lot of trash. Exactly. Burton and Deadman were getting into it a little bit. But then you sort of, you see him on the court, and then he shake and bakes you right by you. He scores an easy 2 points. And this was happening a lot with Burton. He just has those moves that you would never expect from such a figure.
He has 16 points, including some baskets late down the stretch for Oregon State. Michelle Obama's brother, you know. We talk about this Oregon State team. Let's just dive into it with Inauguration Day being today. He was actually in attendance at the ceremony in Washington, D.C. Oregon State's 10-8. They have lost 5 straight games in the Pac-12, and I think none of us expected that because this is a, as you mentioned before the show, one of the best guard duos preseason possibly in the Pac-12. Yet, outside of Roberto Nelson, our other big-time guard for Oregon State has been very disappointing. I don't even want to say what gives because I think they've been playing decent basketball. How do you explain a team that's 10-8 but yet has the talent to probably be like 15-3 right now?
Well, this issue is just the scheduling gods have not been in their favor. If you look at their 5 games, they're 0-5 in the Pac-12. One's against Oregon. So they did not defend home court against Oregon, which is sort of disappointing. But you look at Oregon now, they're playing arguably like a top 10 team. And then they had to go host the Arizona schools. And while a 10-point loss against Arizona State is nothing to be impressive, it's nothing to be proud of. They also lost by 10 points at home to an Arizona squad, which at the time was ranked 4th in the nation. Mm-hmm. And then they come down here and they lose to UCLA by 10 points. UCLA is a solid team. And then USC. I remember the pregame atmosphere before USC is we're not scared of these guys. They may have been 10-7 at the time, but they hadn't won a Pac-12 game. And the Vegas Lions actually had us by 3 to 4 points, so it's not even too shocking to see Oregon State lose to us.
And I think where the confidence was in Oregon State early in the season, you play Alabama, granted SEC team not the strongest in football, or in basketball, as compared to their football team. They played Kansas and only lost by 6. But right where the struggling began, December 29th against Towson, you lose in overtime. Nothing personal here, folks. If you're fans of Towson basketball, do not get on our issue here. We love the Colonial Athletic Conference. They gave us some great teams like George Mason over the years. They've had some inspirational stories. But nothing to brag about with Towson basketball. Yet, they go into Oregon and win that game. Maybe that's where the wheels began to unfold for this team, who has lost 6 out of the last 7 from that point.
Yeah, but you sort of also look at the schedule. They have the Washington schools this week. So Washington State, they're not a very good squad.
You say must-win games at this point.
At this point, yeah. I mean, their at-large berths were hurt a lot by that Towson loss, and now they're 0-5 in the Pac-12. They still have to play Oregon again. But they don't have the Arizona schools, so they're done with Arizona. So yeah. There's a lot of winnable games in there.
I see Washington's. I see Cal Stanford's, Utah, Colorado. A lot of those games coming up for this team. Maybe can salvage whatever's left in Pac-12 play.
But what is interesting is they're hosting Washington, which a week ago you said that would be a very difficult game. But Saturday night, as most people on the East Coast, the 8:30 p.m. game, Washington at Heck Edmond Pavilion in Seattle lost to a previously winless Utah squad. What do you think about that?
Well, what I think, first of all, is somebody didn't get up for that late night game, must have been focusing on the exam the next morning. You look at the first half stats, Utah jumps out to a 33-25 lead at halftime. So obviously, Coach Romar goes, guys, we need to get going here, pick up the pace of play. But Washington followed them step for step in the second half, both teams putting up 40-plus. And it all starts with Washington. You should be getting some better guard play. I mean, C.J. Wilcox, 4 of 11 from the field, not shooting that well. And let's face it, Utah is built from the inside out. Jordan Loveridge and Jason Washburn, Utah's two best post players, put up 35 in that game. They controlled the game with their post play. Yet Washington was not able to score down low. Jacob, I think you got something on this one.
Well, something that Utah sort of you never expected was the play of Cedric Martin. Brandon Taylor. Brandon Taylor hadn't even played in all of their games. He's a freshman guard out of West Hollywood over here in Los Angeles. And then he had a solid game against Washington State, 13 points, his career high. And then he scores 19 points against Washington. 3 of 5 shooting from behind the 3-point line, 6 of 10 overall, 6 assists. It looks like Utah might have actually found their point guard.
They did, and Jared Dubois, the senior, kind of took the old man, I'll sit on the bench, let this freshman ride kind of role. Only played 10 minutes, a guy who was averaging a leading scorer before that point. So it looks like changing of the guard up in Utah. That's still a good team. This team is 9-9. Tough Pac-12 schedule so far. Don't count them out either to give some teams some rough road down the stretch. Let's go back to some USC basketball here. And We did mention the fact that Bob Cantu coached his first two games at USC. Jacob, I want some initial thoughts on the offense, because we've always critiqued Kevin O'Neill for not being an offensive mind whatsoever. Offense was like silly putty in his hands. He just couldn't hold on to it for more than 20 minutes. How has USC's offense looked in the first two games?
One word, better. From what we've seen in the first two games, USC's putting up points. And sort of the issue has also been the role production of Gio Fontan. Obviously, he was allowed to have a little bit more role in the Oregon State game versus the Oregon game.
And when you mean role, you mean him holding on to the ball throughout the possession. Okay.
Exactly. Byron Wesley's actually been allowed to possess the ball a lot more. Brendan Taylor has not seen time since that happened, but Wesley seems to be becoming a lot more of a ball handler. And I think that Wesley is actually being molded into a pro prospect. He's shown a lot of ability on the offensive end at the end of the Oregon State game. Possibly the play of the year for USC basketball is sort of Wesley just sort of, he sees two Oregon State defenders in the lane. He decides he's going anyways. And then he gets up and realizes, oh, I've kind of got them. Sort of doing the Stephon Marbury shake, split through two defenders, easy, crucial late game layup. And the crowd went wild as they should have. And that was sort of, that could be the birth of the Byron Wesley era here.
Byron Wesley, remember, only a sophomore, we mentioned this, putting up much better numbers in Pac-12 play. Double digits in, I believe, three out of his last four games. So here's a guy that you need to know about Wesley. The key for him is going to be, will he be assertive and aggressive, and will he take the next step as a player? Actually, check this out. Byron Wesley has put up double digits in five straight games at least. Yep, five straight games. So who knows? Maybe this is the time. Now, Pac-12 play kicking in, taking more of a leadership role on the offensive end of the court. And I remember last year, I had this conversation, I don't know if it was with you or another USC student, if that guy could just shoot the ball, he could be able to put up double digits. He's so afraid to shoot. He doesn't like the three-point shot in the corner. He doesn't like the drive. He just likes to sit there and be a second-tier part of the offense. Now he's taking more of a dominant role, and it's really paying off for USC.
Well, I agree that he needs to shoot, but I actually like that he's being more aggressive and going to the ball. We have enough perimeter shooters in JT Terrell as well as Ronaldo.
But we've harped for weeks now. Terrell is very inconsistent, and Fontan has definitely been struggling from the field.
And Eric Wise also has a fairly good jump shot, too. Respect the big man.
Yeah, respect the big man. 6'6 and shooting 47% from downtown. I'll take those Kyle Korver numbers any day of the week for USC. So, Jacob, I like what we got so far here. Eric and Student Nation, a little Pac-12 podcast on USC basketball. We also like to preview some other teams as you've listened here. Just a little background on ourselves, because you probably want to know who we are. Jacob, take it away. Tell us a little bit about yourself in your sports career.
So I was born in Kansas City, which means I'm tragically a Kansas City Chiefs and a Kansas City Royals fan.
Hey, Andy Reid, coming to KC?
Check back with me in 3 years on that.
Okay.
He might eat a little too much KC barbecue. I can see a late August stroke, hoping that doesn't happen, but...
Andy. In disclosure, we don't mean any harm to Andy Reid at all. We're just joking.
No, I'm just worried about the Kansas City, the brutal Kansas City summer. And then I moved to the great Pacific Northwest when I was about 4 years old. So I actually grew up a Ducks fan. So coming to USC was a little bit of a transition for me. I grew up in Washington State as well. So I know my Huskies, my Cougars, my Eastern Washington Eagles.
You're an EWU fan.
Football Bowl championship. Champions?
FCS?
Or FCS champions, yes, with the red field, copying Boise State a little bit.
You have to up there. I mean, face it, there's not much to do but sports in that neck of the woods, literally neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. But so, Jacob, what are your expertises here at SC when it comes to journalism, sports, whatever?
So I'm a print digital journalism major. My friend Evan here is also majoring in journalism here at this fine institution. And so what I like to do is I try to bring more of like a organic take to sports. I love talking the X and O's, but I also love the impact that sports has on people. And we'll maybe try to get into that a little bit later in this podcast when we're not breaking down the basic sports, but just sort of, that's what I love about sports. You have someone born into maybe a not so favorable family circumstance. No one in their family's ever going to college. Sports, they're going to USC. They're going to UCLA, another fine institution. They're going to these top colleges, and that's sort of the part of sports that inspires me.
Well, to come off of that point, I definitely agree with you. Sports transcends many things. It becomes a talking point at the dinner table. It becomes a political figure. You have Barack Obama on an interview with Grantland, Bill Simmons, saying that he coaches his daughter's Malia's basketball team on Saturdays. And you talk about a thing that can bring people together, it has to be sports. And that's the communal aspect that I love about professional sports and collegiate sports. Now, I really wish USC could... The largest attendance at a USC basketball game 47-22 for the Oregon game. So fans are starting to come into play here as Pac-12 play kicks up. I think that helps because they had a free student shirt giveaway for one of the games against Oregon.
It's the first time all season we saw the student section filled up to the top.
That's true.
The Trojans, they're still last in the Pac-12 in home attendance.
They are, but 3-3 sitting at sixth in the Pac-12 standings right now, Jacob. This would be a successful season if we could stay in the top six, even seventh, because the expectations were coming into the season. Can these transfers mold together? Can KO get the best production out of his players? And what will we get from JT Terrell? And I think all of those questions are starting to get answered right now in the most important time of the season.
Definitely. And the schedule's not easy over the next 2 weeks. We have the Arizonas, we have the UCLAs, but after that, we have a lot of winnable games. We have the Washington schools after that, and then trip to the Bay Area, where both of those teams are beatable.
A trip to the Bay Area is always difficult, but at the same time, one of the best trips of the year, because USC and Cal, if you look back in history, have played some of the most competitive Pac-12 games that I have seen growing up. Just a little background on myself. I grew up in Los Angeles. I was always a big USC fan, especially during the Taj Gibson days. Now, I know that doesn't make me seem that old, but when Taj Gibson was like a freshman, sophomore, was when I was really getting into USC basketball. Even Daniel Hackett, that's a name that goes back maybe 4 or 5 years now. But even he was kind of a big kid in my basketball era. For me, like I mentioned, the communal aspect of sports, and just love doing it every day. Jacob and myself will give this little podcast here usually on Mondays or Tuesdays, depending on when we get around to it, a little USC basketball update. Jacob, before we go, let's give a little the people some insight on the women's team. Went up to the Bay Area, like you mentioned, this weekend. Lost some close games to Cal in overtime, and then lost to Stanford by 10 points. But this is a team that was 7-10 on the season, yet 4-2 in Pac-12 play. Jacob, can we take anything positive from this trip to the Bay Area?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, before this game, the weekend before this, Cal beat Stanford, ended their lengthy Pac-12 home winning streak, and then USC lost by overtime to Cal. They had a 6-point lead late. They blew that. Last possession shot by Cal sent that game into overtime. But you lose by 8 points in overtime on the road to a top 10 squad, and then they went out against Stanford. They weren't quite as much in that game for the whole time. They sort of were behind.
But compared to our fellow Los Angeles team, UCLA, who got trounced this weekend, earlier in the weekend against Stanford, USC put up a competitive fight. And in usually a two-team conference, maybe we are the third best team in the Pac-12.
We're definitely up there. UCLA will be a challenge because we're going to have back-to-back games against UCLA, sort of a home and away between here and Pollock Pavilion. But yeah, from what I've seen, our team is a little bit similar to the men's in that we sort of have a streaky shooter that once she finds her game, she's in it. And her name is Uriah Crook. And so she's a sophomore here. She had a little bit lesser of a role this year, but against Stanford.
Yeah, no, she is becoming the Jamal Crawford of this team. Hate to give some NBA references, but off the bench for Coop.
You are Coach a Clippers Coop, fan.
I am a Clippers fan, by the way. Off the bench for Coach Coop, this girl can shoot the basketball. She basically becomes the point guard when she comes into the game and then feeds our three-point shooters, Kate Oliver. You even mentioned Cassie Harberts is more of a perimeter jump shooter at the forward position, coming off an all-league role last year for USC. It's an exciting team to watch, and I really wish people come out to see, because women's team is, although the record does not speak to their skill, not a bad team and a very hardworking seven-woman rotation right now.
Yeah, injuries have not been kind to this team. We had a McDonald's All-American in Jordan Adams that went out a few games ago. She's been gone. One of the honorable mention All-Pac-12 forward, Christina Marinacci. She's also been out, and that's not good for her because that's not a way you want to really end your USC career. But yeah, this team is easily competitive. And the Pac-12 women's league is quite competitive outside of the Oregon schools, which fortunately USC only gets to play once this season. But there's a ranked Colorado squad. The Arizona team is very solid. We have Washington at 12-5, also 4-2 in conference. So this Pac-12 women's,
yeah, right now four ranked teams. You got Colorado, UCLA, and the two Bay schools, plus us and Washington right there at 4-2. So it might be a nice little six team race coming down the stretch in Pac-12 women's basketball.
Yep.
Coach Coop. I love Coach Coop. Great guy. You know, coach of the Sparks for years here.
Yeah, I want to see women's coverage get more sort of attention, because there's a sort of a sad story but also a nice story, is that after one of the games, I believe it was a December loss at home to Texas A&M, it was just me and one other reporter in the locker room. And there was a crowd of maybe 20 people that came to the Galen Center for an event, get to watch a game for free, get a free t-shirt. They were all wearing the same t-shirt. And then Michael Cooper tried to plead with him to stay because they realized they were in the wrong place and they sort of wanted to go. And they're like, Cooper's pleading with them to stay. Oh, yeah, please stay. We'd love to have you. They unfortunately left. But after the press conference, as he always does, Michael Cooper always gives a nice, heartfelt thank you. He looks you in the eye and he says, thank you for coming to our press conference. And while some people have criticized former Coach O'Neill for sort of not being the nicest of persons in the way his treatment of his players, Cooper is the absolute opposite. He's a class act, and with this team keeping on winning, he deserves to sort of have a little bit of attention focused more on the woman's side of the sport.
Yeah, the big game's coming up this week, Arizona State and Arizona here in Los Angeles at the Galen Center, so check that out, folks. I think that's it for us this week. We don't want to keep you here from your studying for finals or whatever you have to do in your free time. Evan Bujovic and Jacob Friedman here for Arrogant Student Nation. Check us out next week for another exciting action of USC and Pac-12 sports. Thanks.